Blog Talk Radio.
Your mother's medicine cabinet. This is Frank Reardon, brought to you by the Literary Underground and all those people. So let's bring on Dan. Dan?
Frank?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Not much. Are you out there in the mean streets of Manchester?
Yeah, I'm roaming the streets of Manchester looking for wine and women.
In wild times?
In wild times. So, how you been?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Right on, right on. So, how's been the transition from Worcester to Manchester? Been all right?
Yeah, it's been okay. You know, place to hang your hat. I live right above a bar called the Wild Rover. Good Irish
bar.
That's
cool.
Yeah, so, but, I hang out there. There's another bar across the street called McGarvey's that I usually go and have a beer or two and talk to the old Irishman there. So I enjoy that place.
That's cool. I remember
being
in Manchester like not long, about 15 years ago, working there, and it didn't seem like a bad place.
No. And I live right off of Elm Street, which is the main street, and there's a lot of restaurants and taverns around the area. So. So I enjoy it. It's not, you know, it's not a bad place.
Yeah. So what's Dan Provost got in the works in the world of writing?
Well, I have a book out that I'm waiting to get published by What's in the Bag Press. In fact, you did a review on it, On the Wagon on a Binge. And I'm just waiting for that to get done. The publisher is still working on it, so hopefully it gets done soon. And once it does, I'll send you a copy.
Right on. Do you want to take us right into a poem right now?
Yeah, sure.
Let's take
to a poem. Then maybe we'll talk about the Patriots and how they're going to kick everybody's ass.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Brian Fouget needs to learn a lesson on how bad the Bengals suck.
Oh, God. You know, I guess there's a worse things to worship than the Cincinnati Bengals, but I don't know. The Patriots just look pretty, pretty dangerous. So
we'll get to
that. Okay. This one's called The Faraway Face. He was a face from far away, bearing witness by watching the flock hear his prayers. The resonated short syllables echoed into a small boy's ears, where the lad sighed, blinked his eyes, then walked to the edge of the mountain, but did not leap. He was a face from far away, long ago. Oh, still going on, I'm sorry. He was a face from far away, long ago, fabled on grassy roads, traveled paths taken less often. Mildly amused, bemused, too tired to meddle in transparencies, occupied with the glow of stars and heavens. He was a face from far away, once so near with adroit stares that shot through souls. But power remained inward until it was too late to leave. To journey so long without taking a single step, taking a small child with him, not looking back, frightened, not knowing if yet victorious.
Nice.
So all my dad. So
yeah,
it
was pretty cool at first, and then like you stopped, and you could have ended it there.
I know. I had to turn the page though. That was out of a collection that New Polish Beat did called The South Side of Agony. It was a small press run. It was only 25 copies, but I had this published maybe about 2 or 3 years ago, in a collection called The South Side of Agony. So
you, where did your liking for literature come? Did that come later in life? Because, you know, you were like a football coach at one point, and I'm assuming you played, I forget. Did it come later in life, or is it just something that you always liked on the side since you were younger?
Yeah, since I was younger, I learned to read when I was very young, and, you know, I've always liked literature. Yeah, I did play in college. I played at Dean Junior College in Franklin, Mass., and then I played at Framingham State, which is in Framingham, Mass. And I majored in English there, but, you know, I've done a lot of reading throughout my whole life. My parents were avid readers, and, you know, I guess that's just really, I took that from them. But I've read a lot of stuff, and I've always loved literature. You know, athletes and writers were always my heroes, so...
No, I understand that.
Yeah, so, but it's just, you know, I enjoy reading all sorts of stuff, and it was just something that I did at a really young age, and I just really enjoyed it, and so that's where it came from.
Yeah, that's, it's a pretty sad, like, misconception that, like, and I'm sure there's plenty or some of the athletes in art of any kind. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to run out and buy a Bernie Williams jazz guitar album, but, you know...
Nor should you.
But, like, that athletes can't have, like, an intelligence of any kind, which is completely bullshit, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some, but there's dumbasses everywhere, you know, so...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's just a stereotype that people just want to, you know, conceive in their minds. You know, I've been fortunate. I played the game. I didn't play it for any status or anything. I played Division III football because I loved it. You know, it's a great game. And, you know, literature is just a great thing. And, you know, people that write, I just have a lot of admiration for. People that do it well, I mean, they're just... You know, God was on the day they conceived them, I guess. I don't know, but you know, just people that have that gift, people that write from the soul and people that write from the heart. I mean, those are the true authors. Those are the true writers, I think, anyways.
So, who did you have like as growing up, or maybe now in life that has influenced you, whether it be someone who's dead or someone who's writing now?
Well, you know, it's funny. I started out really with writing with types of lyrics. Pete Townsend, believe it or not, was a big influence on me. He's a guy that really caught, I think, in his lyrics, raw emotion. You know, really, I'm a real big Who fan. And obviously, everybody knows I'm a big Ronnie Van Zant fan. And because I think whatever he did from the soul. And talking about stereotypes a little bit, he's really dismisses, you know, some redneck boogie freak. But if you listen to the lyrics and stuff, he wrote a lot about the government. And he wrote about the concrete slowly creeping into the country, and he was very sly. He didn't cram it down people's throats, but he wrote about the real world. And why I'm a big Ronnie Van Zant. That's why I'm a big Skinner fan. You know, I just think he just really wrote about the real world and wrote it very simply. Obviously Bukowski, once I read him, I mean, I think everybody, whether they want to admit it or not, I like the early Bukowski. I think the early Bukowski is great. Kerouac, I like Jack Kerouac. I think he's a great writer as well, obviously. Wrote about the American landscape real well. James Mincher I enjoy. Everybody from Poe to some of Oscar Wilde stuff. So.
That's cool.
I guess
that's like important to have. You have like a, and I totally agree. I totally agree with music, whatever it may be. Those are in a way like kind of like I suppose quote unquote modern poets or modern writers or whatnot. I like Van Zant a lot, but I'm all set with Lynyrd Skynyrd Part Two. Yeah, but I think it's important to have like influences just outside of like say like books. Like there could be like music or whatever the hell you're doing in your life or whatever. But so why don't you give us another poem?
Sure. Let me sit down and I'll get another poem. So I heard Iris was pretty good last week, huh?
Yeah, she's always bringing it down. I don't know. She's one of my more favorite poets and friends out there in the world. It's been a pretty successful run these past few months. I thought I'd get sick of it, but sometimes I do, but once I'm doing it, it's pretty cool to bring out people's stuff and hear their opinions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think she's a hell of a writer, All right, this one's called The Little Notebook. And if I stop it, it's because I'm turning the page.
All right, man.
All right, here we go. I carry my little notebook to the park, jotting simple observations, just to prove I can witness, to guess people wrong. Making mistakes about him or her is the most humane event in our psyche. It brings us down to the level of tragic hedonism, twisted and puckered out, forgotten kisses and stares. Yes, yes, I carry this little notebook in my pocket to understand failure, to accept it, but more importantly, to see all the budding traps an occasional man or woman may fall into. Stable territory in my quiet corridor, while hoping someday to return to a place where once my name was known and my failures are accepted. And that's it for that one. That's called The Little Notebook.
Cool.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Dad, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frank. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that... we are taking callers. I usually say this like once, so if you do want to call in and bust Dan's chops, you can if you want.
Bust them in, man. Bust them. So what's on the horizon? I hear you got some. You got another book coming out.
Yeah, it should be out sometime in the fall. I'm not sure the exact month, so that could be like September, October-ish, somewhere around there. I'm supposed to edit it.
Congratulations.
So, Yeah, it's all edited, but I just got to, like, go over, like, pick out certain poems that might not be in it with the publisher themselves, and probably do that sometime between July and August or something. And I'm working on something for Punk Hostage for, like, next year, but won't be done for a while.
Yeah,
there's a lot of, like, cool things going on, and Hardung just came out with a book today or yesterday.
Yeah,
and
I saw that on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, but, going into that, the question I ask everybody, since we're talking about that on the internet, is there any, like, positive, or do you see it as more of a positive or a negative, the role of the internet in writing now?
Well, I think that, it brings out a new market. I think, it establishes a market that, wasn't around in my younger years. Jesus, I'm getting old. I'm going to be 50 next month. So, I'm getting old. But I think it establishes writing to people that might not have seen it before. I guess it can be a little bit clicky, but at the same token, I mean, I met a lot of great people through the internet, and I met a lot of great writers just through that. And I think it gives an avenue for writers to show their stuff and an opportunity to get it read. Poetry is one of those things. I mean, if you write it for the money, you ain't going to make any. So I think all great poetry it always comes from the soul. I know that sounds corny, but I don't give a shit. Poetry always comes from the heart, from the soul. And I think that's where poetry comes from. And I read a lot of that on the internet. And, people like Jason Harden, people like yourself, you write from the gut, That's where great writing comes from, I've always thought. So
I think I would have to agree with that, because I don't know. I can remember when I was younger that, like, I would totally be, into one certain way. But now I just don't give a shit. I don't care if someone's writing a haiku or a lyrical poem or a narrative poem. I just want to hear something good. You know what I mean? People that were lyrical poets or haiku masters years and hundreds of years ago or 50 years ago, I mean, they're masters for a reason.
Right.
I don't know. So I see. But we do have a caller. See who's going to bust Dan's chops first.
Hey, my name's Jeff. Oh, yeah. Hi, Frank. Jeff Santolo. Love your work. And Dan, love your work as well. You do a great job.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Very impressive, and it's very refreshing in today's literary world to hear some real original voices out there, and you guys are definitely two of my favorites, two of my big favorites. And to answer your question about the internet, I think that's a very interesting question, especially in terms of what happens is I think it's a great thing on one end because it's so democratic and it gives a voice to a lot of people. On the other end, we also have the problem of trying to sift through so much stuff that's being put out there that sometimes the real talent gets lost in a lot of noise, if you will. That's just my personal take, although I think it's overall a good thing. I think it also can be overwhelming too. In trying to pick out the real unique and innovative voices that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. The internet has opened up a lot of avenues for people, and you might say that now everybody's a poet. And that's, I understand your point, and it does do kind of have to sift through the stuff. I just look at myself or, anybody else and who am I to critique? I mean, I just go out there and try to do my thing and if people like it, great. If they don't, that's their opinion.
Well, you do it well.
I'd also have to say that, like, I don't always agree with the notion that everybody can write. This isn't to say that, like, somebody didn't put their heart into it, but not everybody can write, because if that were to be true, then I could be the starting center for the Boston Celtics, because everybody can be a good basketball player. I mean, I don't buy into that. but I'm not going to knock someone who just sat there and wrote a poem, you know, because that could have been me 15 years ago, like, writing a big pile of piece of shit. That could have been me yesterday, like, you know, but, you know, because they could end up being good down the line. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to knock the trying, but, you know, there is bad writing, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I mean,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I agree. Sure there is.
There are people, Dan.
That, you know, that I'm sorry. We keep talking over each other. My bad. No, I agree. I mean, there are, you know, people out there that do try to copy and then do try to, you know, they're influenced so much by somebody that they just copy it. And, you know, that's a good point. You know, some people just don't have that knack of putting the words together and, you know, putting it in a proper sequence where you can express yourself and, you know, reach the reader as well. And, no, I agree with you, Frank. That's a good point.
Yeah. So, well, Jeff's online here. Why don't you give us another poem?
Okay. This one was off of a, let's see. This one was off of, it was published in India, and it was off of Broadside, called Graffiti, Coca-Cola, Broadside. And a guy on Facebook, I can't pronounce his first name, Subhana Das. He does these broadsides, and I was published on a couple of them, so I'll read this one. It's called It's Not Rocket Science. The flatness stood alone, above the horizon, no core marks to acquire. It is step by step by step, side to side, no moving forward or backward, the journey into awful nothingness. This is all we are, when stripped to the bare, empty, lacking worth. We are the skin of simple evolution. We will not rise, seeing the reward at the end. We are simple, one-syllable characters who leave. Lines of no root or growth. It just turns dead. Dead. I think I was reading Camus when I put that one or something. I don't know.
Well, we've got it in India, man. Are we going to have Dan Provost meditating on the Ganges River or whatever it's called?
Oh, yeah,
in India?
Yeah. Reading Siddhartha or something, you know, so.
playing some ragas for us, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
No, that was great.
Yeah.
That was great.
Oh, thanks. Like I said, it's just, you know, that was published on a broadside about a year ago, so.
If I may,
that's
can
pretty
I pose
cool.
a question to both of you guys, if I may?
Sure.
Have you, either of you, experimented with any types of forms like the ghazal or the sonnets and whatnot, and try to give them a modern sensibility or modern type of twist, or do you find that your voices fit more into the free verse?
Yeah, you can go first.
Well, I a lot of times for me it is free. But I do experiment. I have been, you know, I sometimes will experiment with like haiku. You know, I don't write it often, but you know, I'll try that. Or I have been reading a lot of the Berryman type of sonnets. The project I'm working on now that will come out next year. I mean, I got something in the fall, but the one I'm just started working on, I'm experimenting with a couple of different types of forms. But mainly more of the modern ones, like a Ted Berrigan, like type of a sonnet. Like not to copy him, but his use of sonnet. I'm not really per se into like Shakespearean sonnets and things like that. Okay. It's not so much the form as the language. I can't get into the thous and the thys and the, you know, in the midst of the light, my eyes bloom. Like I can't do that kind of shit, man. Like I.
Right.
But to put like a modern voice in, like Berrigan did or Berryman did, yeah. But it's kind of like a study and a try for me. I mean, but mostly, I would have to say 70% of the time I would do free verse.
Yeah,
because
it's funny you mentioned Berryman.
Go ahead, Dan.
No, because I was reading a lot of Berryman this past winter, so it was just interesting you mentioned him. I really got into him this past winter. To be perfectly honest, I don't think I have the discipline for it. To me, you know, and this is just what fits for me and what's, you know, does for me. Poetry's kind of an artistic explosion. It's something that it just bang, it just comes, you know, and then just it bleeds itself on the page. And I respect people that, you know, can write the sonnets and the haikus, you know, and the ones that write them very well are tremendous writers. I just don't know if I have the discipline to do that, to, you know, to fit in a syllabic type of equation. And that's not to say that that's right or wrong. That's just me, you know. So, but I wish I could. I've tried it, and it's come out pretty crappy.
Oh no, your voice is perfect. I was gonna say your voice comes across to me whenever I read it as if it's like one big Zen blast, boom, right to the face, and it's a very powerful, immediate experience, and that's what I really love. And I've learned so much from your style as well as Frank. Frank, I love the way that you set it up so beautifully and carry it, and then at the very end you have this wonderful bolt or a turn that really just kind of flips the whole thing upside down, and then it's very very skillfully done. I learned the way that you did it. It almost works in a three structure. Very, very well done.
Well, I'd have to agree. Thank you. I have to agree with Dan, though, when that, like, yeah, a lot of times the best ones for me, like, and going on what Dan said, is when I sit down and it just comes. Like, something might have happened. Like, I'll be maybe thinking of something walking to the store, and then if I come down, it will, you know, come out. And a lot of times they don't come into forms, like sonnets and stuff. That's just something that, like, that I'm practicing to try to do. And most of the time I don't like doing it, but, you know, I'm agreeing with Dan that, like, it explodes. So that's why, like, 70, 75% of the time I'm all for free verse. But I think that you have to have some kind of skill or craft at it. I think you have to sweat. You have to work at it. Like, you know, there are very, very few people I've ever met that just could sit down and just play. You know, there was always some kind of work involved.
Free verse.
Oh, yeah.
Free.
You look through a notebook, yeah. And you look through it, and, you know, you might find some, but you also find some stuff that's pretty crappy and pretty garbage, you know. So, but I think that happens all the time, you know. So it is something that you really have to work at, you know, and get the words in the form where, you know, you're portraying an experience maybe, or you're portraying, you know, an emotion, and the reader can identify with that to the point where they walk away saying, hey, yeah, I know what he's talking about, you know. So it is a skill. You're right, Frank. I agree with you 100%. It's definitely a skill to sit down and you know, kind of manipulate the words or form the words where the reader can really identify with it. And, you know, that's great writing. So,
yeah, I definitely agree that you don't want to be boring. Like, I walked outside and there was a hot chick and I grabbed her ass, like, in the end.
Right,
like,
right.
That's boring. Or something that I experimented in, which is a little bit in my last book, which, you know, I'm not too keen on anymore, but I had to try it, was the surrealist kind of stuff that doesn't work for me, because at the end of the day, I feel like I ripped myself off because I wrote something that said, fishtail lamp light post outside head, like, you know, and it makes no, like, sense to me. Like, so, I mean, it works for other people. It might work for painters too, but it doesn't work for me to do that. Like, you know, but anyways, Dan, why don't you give us another poem?
Sure. I'll give you another one. All right. This one's from Born to Look Down on the Ground, which is published by Covert Press. This one's called Tyson and Cobain. Mike Tyson never believed that Cobain could ride on a moonbeam. He was just another brawler ready to reap the awards of beating people up. The intellectual stuff was for the computer geeks and butterfly collectors, Tyson must have thought, as old Kurt flew to places only a young Rimbo could fathom. Mike wanted instant gratification, a wife to hit, a bar patron to punch, while Kurt craved cerebral, wanting to see the world with visceral eyes, brooding about the search. Blended colors, frightened children, afraid to live the transient world of mind-speak. Tyson now has a tattoo on his face, strained to be remembered as a great fighter. Cobain is dead. He's buried somewhere in Seattle with a shotgun hole in his skull. I wonder if Mikey still thinks of Cobain and the strange way each one pursued Nirvana.
Great ending, man.
Of Tyson and Cobain, yeah. So.
Oh, shit. We've got another caller for Dan. Let's see who this is. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to read one of my favorite Dan Provost poems. It is
okay,
titled,
who's this?
It is titled Breast at Boston College.
Is this Brian Fouget?
To walk
it
along
is.
The campus on a warm September day, push-up bras piling cleavage together like endless canyons, staring at the mountains with fonte honesty as the girls hustle away from this old man whose sheepish grin they will never understand. Then, to stroll in December, tight coats around pillages of fleshy skin, covered and waiting to be exposed by Nancy or Sue to young Rick or Dennis. Cold, pampered dorm rooms, starting another lusty take of real academic advancement. I slowly shuffle away like the stereotypical 60-year-old flasher, muttering to myself, I remember once upon a time, in poem.
That and was the Bengals are going nowhere.
How's it going, Dan? I had to
hey,
call into the show,
on,
man. This is the
oh,
first
no,
time I ever called into
good.
The show. I had to hear you, man.
Oh, how you doing?
Doing good, man. I
love
your poetry.
It was originally going to be Assumption College, but I got laid off and we were getting a little squirmish, so I said, oh, you better change it to Breast at Boston College.
right. Yeah, that's good.
That's right.
Actually, that's slated to appear in Zygote print number 9 here, which should be coming out within the next couple of weeks, man. I've been busting my balls getting that together, and Zygote number 10 and a bunch of other
yeah.
books. But the Patsy. What?
I'll tell you right now, one thing I do got to say is that I do have respect for people like you. That I'm not kissing your ass because the Bengals do suck, and I know you're going to go talk about the Patsies in a minute. But. But, you know, you're doing it for the love of the art, and that's something that's very appreciative, you know, so especially the stiffs like me, you know, so really, really appreciate it. So, all right, go ahead. Talk about the Patriots and how they suck. How I'll laugh when they go
It's hard for me to say they suck, you know, because they are pretty damn good. But I don't know how they do it year after year, you know. They it's not like they pick up a whole bunch of free agents or anything. They just pick guys out of the draft, man, and sometimes they take undrafted guys, you know. They know how to do it. They've got scouts from hell, but, yeah, that's enough.
Well, I think what's going to be dangerous about them this year is that they've got people that are going to be dangerous outside the hash marks. I mean, they've got Hernandez and Gronkowski who are good between them. Now you get a guy like Brandon Lloyd who gets that stretch and gets those third-level players, you know, off the field. Their underneath game now is even going to be more dangerous. If they can get that, if Lloyd can stretch the field, they're gonna be a tough, tough team offensively. No,
you're not only gonna have Welker, but you're gonna have Welker, Jabbar Gaffney, and
that's
Deion
right.
Branch underneath, all three of
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
And
you
got Josh
you know,
McDaniels back on O coordinator.
Yeah. If Brandon Lloyd can stretch that field, you know they're gonna just now all of a sudden they're dangerous outside the numbers, which means those corners and safeties have to respect that. And their underneath game, I mean, Gronkowski might catch 170 balls this year. You know, so. But you guys do get Brent Jarvis Green Ellis. So.
He's a Bengal now, damn it.
That's
listen
right.
To you, Dan,
that's
talking
I mean.
Like a coach and everything.
Oh,
you got the whole
I mean,
all the lingo
you know,
down
I
and everything.
For 27 years, you know. So
talking about hash marks and all that good stuff.
Oh, hey, I mean, that's, you know, that's what it is. I mean, that's where the underneath.
You can't ignore the defensive talent we got in the draft, and we got some awesome Chandler Jones and Hightower. I think they're going to have big
oh,
years.
Yeah.
And we stole the Bengal Jonathan Farine.
Yeah.
Oh,
name
right.
is.
Fanene, yeah. Yeah, that was a big loss for the Bengals, I hate to say. But, you know, that's the Patriots' Achilles heel, man, is their defense. So you better hope
yeah,
they,
I mean,
they get, you know.
I was very surprised that they got Hightower. I thought Hightower would be gone by the time the Patriots drafted. And I'm like Aaron Reardon's boyfriend, Mike Noonan. I sit there and I watch the draft. You know, and I'm sitting there and all of a sudden, oh, yeah, all of a sudden Hightower slipped down. I was like, holy shit, they got Hightower. So I was psyched that happened. So, but we'll see. I mean, the Bengals, you know, They made the playoffs last year.
Yeah, a lot of analysts are actually picking them to win the division this year, believe it or not. Either that or come into second place and make the playoffs.
Yeah.
A lot of analysts are actually picking the Steelers to, like, finish third and the good old Cleveland Browns to finish last. So.
Yeah, but then the Bengals have to come to Foxborough in the playoffs when they get their ass kicked, so that's okay.
Yeah. As long as they make it, like, past
kidding.
The first round of the playoffs, I'll be happy. You know, that'll be a step up. My daughter's flag football team's undefeated, by the way, just to let you guys know.
Yes. Your daughter's got the mentality of a linebacker. She's got the eyes of Mike Singletary.
She scored 4 touchdowns already this season, and she's pulled, about 7 flags. So I'm pretty proud of her.
Awesome. Hey, man, I'll tell you, I played football for 9 years, and I never scored. I carried the ball once in my life, so good for her. She's experienced something I never have.
Yeah, same here.
That's
I played
awesome,
QB football for 2 years, and then I never scored a touchdown. The longest run I had was an 11-yard run.
Was it really? Yeah.
11-yard run. It was a left guard around. It's where I was lined up as a left guard and dropped back and was handed the ball off to me, and I went around the end.
The old Pomeruski.
Yep. Yeah. That's what it was.
Awesome. So how's your family doing, Brian?
Oh, good. Real good.
Awesome.
So I just had to call in and say hi, man, and rib you a little, and just let you know, I've enjoyed had the privilege of listening to you read live, and you definitely have a hell of a presence on the stage or anything, something, you know, I really like, so.
Oh,
that's
thanks.
That, man.
Appreciate it. All right, Brian.
I'll let you guys go.
Go
do your thing.
All right,
yeah.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take it easy, guys.
All right, take care.
Brian's going to go put on his Bengals disco pants now.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I was cracking
Kenny
up.
Kenny Anderson shirt.
I was cracking up when he was reading in that British accent. I couldn't help myself.
As soon as you read the poem, I knew what it was. I was like, that's Fouget. I know it is.
So why don't you give us another poem in an American accent?
Okay. Let me see here. Out. All right. Here's one called Wrong Charlie. And it starts off with a Bukowski quote. Death man is ready for. It's the simple things that send a man to the madhouse. And that was a quote by Bukowski. Wrong, Charles. Death man is never ready for. Simple things might send them to the madhouse, but you can leave eventually. Back to the costume, all hung up in a nice wall-in closet. Death, there is no turning back. You step out the door and into something that you have never experienced. The madhouse has tangible exits. You may not be cured, but many leave. Death can be the end or something that cannot be explained. Some strive to obtain death by not breathing. Some are dead already, but continue to blink, nod, and fuck, but fail to realize they're already gone. They do not necessarily live in madhouses, nor do they admit they are wishing to be deceased. You see, morality is a funny thing, Charlie boy. Tell someone it will be taken away in an hour and watch the population freak. So please, Chuck, Charles, Hank, or whatever you want to be called today, do not tell me that man is ready for death and breaking a shoelace is enough to send a man to the madhouse, because you're lying to those who have legitimately gone insane.
Ooh. Challenging a master. I've always liked that. The challenge, the people when they give their influences a challenge. Would you challenge Ronnie Van Zant?
Would I challenge Ronnie? That would be a tough one. I don't know. Yeah, I might challenge him on a few things, but not too many. So one of your boys recently died. Levon Helm.
Yeah. I'll never get to go to that Midnight Ramble now, man. I was all geared up to want to go to that, like, you know, free Midnight Ramble, and you gone and died. So
I worked with a guy who loved Levon Helm, who loved the band. He was just sad and, you know, excruciously when he heard that Levon Helm died. So.
Yeah, you know, well, like, a lot of people get really upset, like, but, like, these people that are dying, like, a lot of them, like Levon Helm, they're like dying at the age grandparents would and stuff. You know, they lived a long, successful life. Like, you know, what did you want? Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be in, like, diapers and shitting myself at, like, 105 or something.
I agree. Even if you're still making good music.
So, yeah, there's no need to live like that. But where can, if people want to, if they're here in Provost for the first time and they're liking Provost, where can they, find your stuff?
Well, Rank Stranger Press still has my book, The Quiet Learning Curve, which was me and my former girlfriend, Kalithia Dreamer, and me publishing. So you can buy it off of their website, Rank Stranger Press. Born to Look Down on the Ground is off of covertpress.com. You can buy it off there. I've had some stuff published in Open Wide. I haven't had stuff published, in, I'd say, 3 or 4 months. But like I said, I started a new job. I moved to a new place. So I've been jotting here and there, but I haven't done as much writing. But you can go to those sites. Open Wide came out with a 10-year anthology that I have about 4 or 5 poems in. So they can go to Open Wide magazine. That's a magazine out of Great Britain. But those would be a good primer, I guess, So that's the place where they can find them. Oh, they want to just
that's
Google
cool.
me. Yeah, just type yeah, in damn prose. Just don't type in scum. Just type in poetry. Or skank. Damn Provost skank.
The skanks, where are the skanks? I think I said that in Kansas City a couple of years ago, like 100 times. Dan, where's the skanks? It's pissing you off, man.
Yeah, that's a...
Everybody always asks me about that first night in Kansas City, like... Because Hardong said I got so drunk that, like, when I was walking across the street, like, some car almost hit me, and I, like, ran around, and I punched it, and I started beating on the car, and I was passed out in places, and they were like, well, how did that happen, Frank? I was like, blame Provost. Provost
yeah,
and skanks. Every time I turned around, there was a different type of drink in my hand.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days, man. John Dorsey can say some horror stories about me. I mean, I've hanging out with him and Casey Rearick before he got off the bottle. I mean, we did some crazy shit. I woke up in a car one time. Didn't know how I got there. My jaw was hurt, and I guess I was trying to hit on some girl or something. And I was in these blurry new sheets. I woke up. It was like 5 in the morning. I didn't know whose car it was. I was like, where the hell am I? I had to call, I had to call Bunsen, John's friend who lives at Collinsworth with him at the time. And, you got to come get me. I'm in some street in Toledo. I don't know where I am.
Or it could have been like the first time I met you when you're like laying out poets in restaurants and shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Only
Provost things. Yep.
That's all right. We all do stupid things. Well.
Yeah,
we're down to the last minute, and the lady's on the phone, but it was a pleasure to have you on tonight, Dan.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Frank. Stay in touch. You're going to be moving to Maine pretty soon, right?
Yeah, so New England is one of the outlooks. We won't know definitely until, like, the fall or winter where we're going to be going, So
okay.
That's definitely one of those places, but you'll be in the loop.
All right, Frank. Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care, my friend.
You can get all the stuff on all the places he said, or you could Google him, or you can find him on Facebook. He's one hell of a writer. He's one hell of a person. And next week's show, June 11th, will be Misty Velvet Rainwater Lights, or just Misty Rainwater Lights. So... I don't know.